This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Thank you to Stan Weber for spending the last hour and a half talking sports with us. Now, look who I've found. It's our good friend, Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com.
Missouri.
Hello, Gabe. How are you?
I'm tired because I stayed up watching basketball when I knew how it was going to end.
Oh, yeah? What do you mean by that? Elaborate, please.
Well, you know, I've seen this game before.
Mm-hmm. Have you?
The teams that I am interested in watching play, because there aren't that many of them, I wish they would play more like at noon instead of 9:30 at night.
Right. That was a stupid start time. Okay. It's a yearly tradition. I wasn't as mad last year, but back to being angry. It's a little theme here. Steven gets angry about players that used to play at Missouri that succeed in the NCAA tournament. Nate and Jake love it, and so take me through, won't you? And again, when a kid transfers, you don't know if it was his decision, if the coach pushed him out, or if it was mutual, or what was behind the decision. Muhammad Jara, yeah, last night for NC State, played 39 minutes and had 17 points and 12 rebounds in their upset win over Texas Tech. He had a solid season, averaged over 6 points and 7.5 rebounds per game, 6'10", 250 pounds, very athletic. Seems like you could use a guy like that. How did that go, him leaving Mizzou, where he could go for a double-double in a tournament win last night?
Yeah, like you said, I don't know for sure. I don't believe that, like, the coaches told him, hey, you need to find another place to play. I think he didn't play probably as much as he wanted to, thought maybe it would work out better somewhere else. I don't think they fought real hard. But in fairness, there were very few people when that happened last year saying, man, that's a guy I really want to hang on to. There were some, but not many. But, you know, if you watched Mo play last year, like, you didn't see this. You know, he had trouble hanging on to the ball. He liked to dribble more than he should. He turned the ball over a lot. He just wasn't all that effective last year. And good for him. I'm glad it's working out and he's become a better player. Whether that would have happened here or not, I don't know. Definitely, you know, you could use a guy that had 7.5 rebounds a game, no question.
Yes.
But hey, he's over. He helped save a coach's job that was going to get fired. He's playing in the NCAA tournament, and good for him. You know, this is. Almost every fan base in America can probably find a guy that, like, hey, he played for us last year, and now he's playing for them, and he's doing well. That's the age we live in now.
All right, so they've landed their first player in the transfer portal. What do they get, Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, Jacob Cruz is a kid that averaged 19 points and 8 rebounds last year. He's listed anywhere from 6'8 to 6'6, so we'll call him 6'7. You know, the numbers are there. There's always a question, is that going to translate from, you know, the Ohio Valley to the SEC? I don't think he'll be 19-8 next year, but shot, I want to say 41% from three. So he does some things certainly that they need. This to me is, like, it doesn't fill necessarily a position that we said right off the bat, hey, this is something they've got to get. They still need a point guard. They still need a big man. But this is kind of a best player available type thing. And so this tells me they're still getting at least three more, I think, out of the portal.
All right. So I don't have a point guard for you, but a lot of Mizzou fans are focused on, of course, it seems like there's always a Porter brother that could save the day because time is a flat circle. So we're back to hoping a Porter brother will come to Mizzou. Javon Porter, who is in the transfer portal, leaving Pepperdine. He's available. And then kid out of St. Louis, Terrace Reed Jr., center for Michigan that looks exactly like the kind of player Mizzou could use. Those are two very high on the wish list. What are the chances that Mizzou lands one or both of them or none of them?
Yeah, Javon, 6'11 kid, very skilled, not like a down low, back to the basket post player by any means, but, you know, we've seen his two older brothers play. And he's not Michael, he's probably not Dante, but we know the skill set and the type of player. Feel good about that one.
Do you?
Have heard since he entered the portal, like everything I've heard from people around town is, hey, this one's probably going to work out. Terrace Reed, I've heard some things that, hey, he entered the portal, and I had heard before he entered the portal, if he goes in, watch Missouri. But I don't know as much about that one just because he's not a kid from Columbia. I don't know, you know, people that know his family and stuff like that. But 6'10", 265, I think he averaged, I don't know, 6.5 rebounds, something like that, a game last year. And obviously, yeah, that's a skill set that Missouri severely lacked this season.
So we'd have to change a little bit, but we could start playing this sounder again on the air if they get.
They got Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter. I'm getting tickets.
You have to change it to Javon, and then we could reignite the excitement for the.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be quite the same,
I'll force it. Okay, football, before we let you go. Spring game has come and gone. I know Eli Drinkwitz had a press conference. So now, are they going to be active in the transfer portal? Should we expect more additions? Is there any particular place that you think there might be a weakness that needs to be addressed? How do you feel about this team and the depth chart right now after the spring game is now done?
Yeah, you know, Drinkwitz said kind of what I've said. You look at the roster, I don't see any glaring holes. That doesn't mean they can't get better. He said they will be aggressive in the spring portal. They'll add another offensive lineman. They've got a couple that already have visits scheduled. Whether that's a guard, a tackle, I don't really know because they have some guys that have flexibility to play both spots. I wouldn't be shocked by another pass rusher. I don't know if they have to have it, but I wouldn't be shocked. And I wouldn't be surprised by another defensive back. By our math, they've got two or three scholarship spots. I'm sure there will be a couple other people transfer out. You know, now that spring ball's done, they kind of figure out, hey, I'm probably not going to play a lot here. So I think they'll add two, three more guys here in the spring. But we mostly know what they are. And, you know, I thought Drinkwitz was in his press conference on Tuesday. Post-spring is always kind of a good time to ask kind of big picture stuff, right? We're not breaking down the left guard competition in spring ball too much. So you get some big picture stuff. And he, you know, he was – very confident in his team without being, I think, cocky, which, you know, Eli's been that a few times in his life. I think he would admit that. But, you know, he said, hey, I look at this roster and where this thing is, and I don't see any reason we can't stay winning at this level for a while.
Finally, anything new on the AD search?
Not really. You know, I've heard some talk that they're starting to talk to some people. I don't really have any names, to be quite honest. I don't think I will. I think we'll just kind of find out they hired somebody. They're doing this super secretively, but you got that. And then Missouri got Pro Day, actually starting right about now, today. So, you know, 16 guys going through, 8 of them are at the combine, and, 6, 7, 8 guys could hear their name called next month.
Finally, Nate says that anyone that thinks that was a clean block last night at the end of the Kansas game doesn't know basketball. Gabe, your response, please.
I did want to know, is it honest, Nate, this morning, or is it let's troll on the radio for 4 hours?
I don't know. It might be hungover, Nate. So let's tune in to Nate Buchady right now, live from a ranch. Nate Buchady, go ahead.
Do those things have to be mutually exclusive? Right. I mean, can't I be honest, Nate, and hungover, Nate, at the same time?
Sure.
I mean, does it necessarily have to be one or the other?
Not really.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was an obvious foul, Gabe. I don't see how anybody can see it any other way.
Okay, clearly. So question answered. It is troll on the radio for 4 hours this morning. That is, look, coming from me, this is a strong statement. That might be the worst call I've ever seen in a Kansas basketball game.
Wow. Good God.
Look, Gabe, it's hard to see those plays cleanly when you're trying to ref from right inside Bill Self's back pocket. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
I agree. Also, when you spend your entire second half bent over the video monitor for every call that doesn't matter and then can't review the one that does, it's an excellent sport. Things are in good shape, man.
Gabe DeArmon, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you very much.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
That was a hell of a segment. We got a lot done there. So now let's try it with Jay Heidrich.
Kansas State.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
Good, gentlemen. How you doing?
Oh, you know what? We're doing pretty good. Let's just pick up right where we left off there. What did you think of the block that was called a foul? Was it a clean block, or do you agree with Nate? Clearly a foul.
Well, it's just another example of KU having those refs in their back pocket,
right.
You know. It looked clean to me on the replay. But making that call in live action when it's boom, boom, particularly when it hit the ground that hard, you know, it doesn't surprise me that they called it that way. But this is an example of maybe there needs to be some revision to the replay in college basketball to go with NBA to where you have more expanded ability to challenge different calls, but you just can't go replay everything and it drags the game on.
What say you, Nate Bucati?
Well, I...
why's there always got to be some controversy this week? Every day. Can't have normal conversations.
You know, this is why we can't have nice things.
Right.
I mean, honestly, when I was watching it live, I thought it was a foul.
The shocker.
And then I saw the replay, and I was like, that's one of the best blocks I've ever seen. I mean,
yep.
It was an incredible play.
That's exactly right. Okay, so we got K-State business to conduct with you right now. We found out yesterday that guard Cam Carter plans to enter the transfer portal. The 6'3 junior averaged 14.6 points, 5 rebounds, and 2.6 assists per game. Number one, are you surprised? Number two, how big of a loss would this be?
Number one, no. Number two, Cam's replaceable. Cam's done a lot of really good things for K-State when he transferred in from Mississippi State when Coach Tang got the job. But at the end of the day, Cam put up some good numbers and put up some bad numbers. As one of my friends said yesterday, that K-State's got to replace 14 points, but on the opposite side, our opponent's got to replace 18 points. So he had a tendency to turn the ball over a little bit. I think that maybe he was asked to do too much and was put in a role that his skills didn't really fit. So I think that while it is certainly production that you have to find a replacement for, it's not something that you can't replace. I think that K-State's going to obviously hit the transfer portal hard, and they've got people on the roster who can step up as well too. I think R.J. Jones is going to have a breakout year as a sophomore. He's going to be a special player to go along with the two other freshmen that K-State has on the bench right now.
Nate Bucati, any follow-ups before I transition to women's basketball?
No, let's transition to women's basketball.
All right, let's do it. Iowa could not have been happy during the selection show when they saw K-State pop up in their side of the bracket in a possible Sweet 16 matchup, considering in the last year plus they played three times and K-State's won two of them. But for local basketball fans, what an opportunity. What an attractive matchup. Now, got to avoid the upsets, and Stan pointed out Colorado is a talented team, and that's a potential second-round matchup for K-State in Manhattan. But tell me what you think of the K-State women getting the 4 seed, hosting the first couple of games, and then potentially getting another crack at Caitlin Clark and Iowa in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, the women's game is no different than the men's game, and maybe even more so, that it all comes down to matchups. K-State in particular is an inside-out team with Ayoka Lee, obviously, and they match up well against other teams that that play that similar type of game. They they match up well with Iowa because they obviously don't have a Caitlin Clark, but Iowa's not going to pressure you for 40 minutes. They're not going to try and go up and down with you. So that's why K-State matches up well with Iowa so well. But Colorado's going to be a tough matchup for K-State because Colorado is really, really athletic, particularly in the backcourt. I watched Colorado take down LSU in Vegas on the opening weekend and was just really, really impressed with how they executed, you know, how they talk on defense and play a team game. And so that will be a huge challenge for K-State because Colorado is not the type of mold of a team that K-State wants to see. They're going to pressure you. They're going to get after you on the defensive end. And it'll be interesting to see how K-State can handle that. But if they can get past Colorado, then that will be a great matchup, assuming Iowa gets there as well, too.
Right. Nate Buchady.
Yeah, Jay, I entered a bracket contest on the women's side, and I picked K-State to beat Iowa. So I'm curious, you know, you're making me a little nervous about them getting there in the first place, but I just feel like they are they're a matchup nightmare for Iowa. Come on, let's go. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And you can't say it's a fluke. I mean, they've played, I think, three times. K-State's won two out of those three in the last 2 years and was really close. It was a really close, really good game on the third game. So it is a good matchup for K-State. But like I said, you got to get there on the first side of it. K-State has one of the things that they'll have is obviously home court advantage. Bramlage is going to be rocking. Last time I saw it was pretty close to a sellout if it wasn't completely. But people are going to show up. It's going to be loud. It's going to be crazy. And that'll definitely help K-State's chances to get to that rematch.
All right, Jay Hadrick, back to the men's tournament. What Big 12 team did you have going the furthest in the NCAA tournament in your bracket?
I have Houston. I think Houston is a national championship contender, despite the fact that Iowa State absolutely put a beat down on them in Kansas City last week. I just think overall Houston's a really, really deep. Their style of play works well for the tournament. They can play in numerous different fashions, and so I think Houston has a chance to go deep. But you know, Iowa State, there's no team in the country that's hotter than Iowa State right now. We'll see if that lasts or not. But right now, they're putting on a clinic on how to play basketball.
Were you surprised at all that BYU and Texas Tech both one and done, losing to 11 seeds?
No. You know, particularly Texas Tech, I actually picked NC State to beat Texas Tech. NC State's a really talented team. The big guy they have is a really skilled player. He's like that guy in pickup ball that you can't get around, you can't guard. He's so big, and then you try to bring two people to him, and he can really pass. He's an underrated player for them and a dominant force, and they've got just enough around them to really be good and really be effective. They got to knock down some shots to help maximize that weapon. If they don't knock down shots, then it becomes easier to double team. But I was not surprised at all that NC State beat Texas Tech. And BYU is just so up and down, right? You live by the three, die by the three. If you make shots, then you're really, really good. If you don't make shots, then you can get beat by anybody. But I think you're seeing in this year's tournament in particular what the parity that exists on the men's game. And the women's game isn't quite there yet. You know, there's still only about six teams in the country that can actually win a national championship on the women's game. The men's game, there's only a handful still, but you're going to get more upsets in the earlier rounds than you'll see in the women's game, just because the parity in the men's game is at an all-time high. And the women's game is getting there, and it will get there. But I think you're seeing in the men's game right now a lot of parity amongst teams to where you'll see more upsets like this. And it's tough to call them upsets when it just keeps happening.
Who's your Final Four and your national champion?
I've got UConn is my national championship. And what's crazy is I didn't even fill out a bracket this year. So
wow.
I can't give you my Final Four. I find that I think UConn's going to win it, but I do find that the tournament is much more enjoyable for me to watch when I don't fill out a bracket, because then I can cheer for all the upsets without without hurting myself.
Well, my bracket went straight to hell immediately because I listened to Jake tell me that Texas A&M was going to go to the Sweet 16, so or Mississippi State go to the Sweet 16. So I, of course, I listened to my guy and put Mississippi State in the Sweet 16, and they're out of the tournament already. So
yeah, if you look at that 8-9 game though, I mean that's a tough matchup or a tough pick regardless, because Chris Jans does a great job down at Mississippi State, and he's rebuilding that program, or building it up, I should say. And, I totally could have seen that going to Sweet 16. But, it's that first-round 8-9 matchup. That's a very equal matchup on both sides of the ball there.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Thank you.
Nice word. Really worked out, too. Thanks.
You.
Appreciate it, Jay. Hey, Jay, thanks for the time, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a good day. See you.
All right, so now this would be the point where we talk to Greg Gurley, but we're going to have a lengthy conversation with him at 9:05 because that's what Nate requested. So,
well, and I think Greg requested, too, that he got a few minutes of sleep.
No, it doesn't matter.
He's on a different time zone.
Right.
It's like, want to make sure you have time to hit that breakfast buffet.
Wow.
Jeez.
Before that, no. You got that? Can we play that back at 9:05? Okay, it hits different when Greg actually hears him say that. Okay?
Yeah, I can.
Unsolicited.
I'll pull it.
Thank you. And then are we going to
do a bracketology to close the show?
9:30? Okay.
Yeah.
Border Patrol bracketology. Between now and then, we've also got Mike McFarland. Throw a little baseball in there.
Throw him in next. Our picks didn't do so great yesterday.
No.
Nope. Trying to tell you guys about Duquesne. You wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
You know what? That's enough out of you.
Also, try to tell you about McNeese State.
Yeah, right.
You did tell us about McNeese in the Sweet 16. So I'm going to go ahead and guarantee you they're not going to upset Kansas, Nate.
See, how did we do? Yesterday, so we lost BYU and Drake and Mississippi State and Nevada and Texas Tech and Kentucky. Hey, we got KU and Gonzaga right. And we got South Carolina wrong. Got Creighton right. Got Colorado State wrong. Got Illinois, Iowa State, Tennessee right. We did not do very good.
Would you like me to tell you about an experiment that I'm following that you may find interesting?
Yes. I mean, if we want to look at our bets, I was almost even with the help of Garrick Dieter yesterday. I just won like $10.
Do you happen to follow, a gentleman by the name of Matty Betts?
No. Have you told me about Matty Betts?
Matty Betts, this is what he's doing. He's betting $1,000 on every underdog money line for the whole NCAA tournament, and he's keeping track and showing everyone what he's doing, right?
I bet he's doing pretty good.
So, here's the update after the play-ins and Thursday slate of games.
Wow.
His recap of betting $1,000 on every underdog money line for the entire tournament.
Matty Betts.
Right? You want to know how he did?
Just off the top of my head, I think he probably ended up on the plus side.
7 wins, 13 losses, but he's up $3,800.
Yeah, because the payoff's on those.
Right. That's exactly right.
That's an interesting philosophy.
Oakland was plus
money line Kansas next game. Let's go.
Oakland was plus $650.
Oh, yeah.
Duquesne was plus $350.
I had a couple prop bets I hit on in the KU game. I had Hunter Dickinson over 11.5 rebounds, and I had Dwan Harris over 10.5 points. All right. I was pretty much even, like I said, until I factor in the Garrick Dieter bet, and that put me over the top. Thanks, Garrick.
Yeah, I spent time with Garrick Dieter yesterday, and so
I won $12. Thanks.
You were a topic. You were missed.
Yeah, I saw that text. I wish I could have made it over there, but
we enjoyed some good food, good conversation, real good conversation.
I bet
watching the games over Chicken Pickle. So
Garrick's, both those guys are great dudes and super interesting fellows.
There's a funny part of the story that I'll leave for Sherm to tell on Thursday.
Nate?
No, it just involves the dynamic of what happened yesterday.
Okay. All right.
Should I tell it or not?
I'm kind of interested.
So, Gehrig is the one that invited me.
Sure.
And I said, oh, you know what? No one's invited me to watch games. You know? Of course, I'll go out there. Let's go.
Offer.
Right. And then he said,
not everybody invites us to ranches to watch games.
Right. Oh, I know. I get it. And so then Sherm was on the text thread, and he goes, oh, well, St. John's going, I'm going to go. And that made me feel, I said, maybe that's nice. It made me feel nice. And there's another friend of Garrick's there. We order some food. We're enjoying ourselves. DraftKings was putting on a special event there, so that's why you would have loved it, you know. So we're there. And Gehrig had positioned it. Hey, who wants open invite? Who wants to come and watch the Creighton game with me? Because he's a big Creighton guy now. I said, all right, what time are you going to be there? 12:20. I think game starts at 12:30. We get there, we meet. Sherm gets there a little bit later. Not even quite the halftime yet. Gehrig stands up. All right, boys, got to go. What are you talking about? Got to go.
What?
And Sherm's going, are you kidding me? Maybe it was after halftime. It was halfway through the game or so.
The game had not been completed.
Right. And I thought he was jacking around. shakes everyone's hands, gone. And I go, what the hell just happened? We'll let Sherm elaborate on it, but he had to go.
Yeah.
Right. And so I told Sherm, I said, well, I'm glad you're here. The guy that invited me just walked out. So
right. Like, what if he did? Like, what if Sherm didn't show up?
Right.
Like, thanks for coming, St. John. I got to go.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Make some other friends and chicken and pickle.
Right. Well, I did. So Sherm and I sat there and watched the game. So, yeah. You know, ate some wings. Talk a little football. Talk some basketball.
That's fantastic. That is.
Is it?
Well, I mean,
that's very on brand.
Oh no, it was super on brand.
Yeah.
I thought he was kidding. He's not. So long, fellas.
So you know, like, coming back into this role, like you know, I have past relationships with all our guests, right? Almost all of them. Like you know, DeCourcy. You know, I still have. Yeah. We had great back and forth. You know, he's a big Liverpool guy. I'm a Man U guy. You know, so Buster. I had great conversations with Buster, bringing him back in. You know, all. McFarlane, you know, all these, I have, but, you know, I don't know Gehrig Dieter, and I don't know Anthony Sherman very well.
No, you're getting to know.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, the more I peel this onion, this dude.
Hey, it's a two-way street. They don't know you either, yeah. Jake. They're learning about you, buddy.
Yeah.
There were good stories yesterday.
I bet.
You missed out.
I bet.
It was fun. Until he just abruptly left.
That's so great.
Gotta go. Yeah. I'm like, that's way out of my way. You know?
Yeah.
I was told Sherm, I said, boy, I'm glad you showed up.
45 minutes away from here, at least. Yeah. Maybe
opposite
more.
Opposite side of town.
The complete opposite side. Well.
But I'm glad I went, though. It was fun.
Yeah.
Just about to watch games.
I need to get back out and play some pickleball. It's getting that time of year.
Get out there and stretch your legs, you know?
I need it.
You love it.
Start hitting some balls around.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Mike McFarland right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Let's check in with Mike McFarland. Talk some baseball with Mac. What's up, Mike? How are you?
If Jake runs up $4.5 million, I don't think in depth you... You and Nate and I don't think we got him covered, do you?
No. His interpreter will take care of it, though.
Yeah, but, he's on his own when Rocco and Moose come to claim and say it's time to pay up.
There'll be a day I'll be shaving my beard and cutting my hair, and you'll never hear from me ever again.
So what do you think of this? Because, boy, oh, boy, is this rocking the baseball world.
Isn't MLB happy a week out and you get this? Oh, and the story keeps changing, and where there's smoke, there's fire. They don't need it. Nope. It is just, it's shocking. What also shocks me is the dude was making $500,000 a year or something like that. I'm like crying out loud. Yeah, so it's scary. There's a lot more to come from this, and, you know, hey, maybe there's some people in the –
L.A. Police Department that were Angels fans and that are ticked off that he's over at the Dodgers now. So I think there's going to be some ugliness to this, especially since the story has been changing. But I think he can afford the best lawyers in the world right now to help him get out of this.
Do you think Pete Rose is monitoring the situation closely?
You think? Yeah. He's like, and what about you? I'm here. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. And then throw on top of it the debut of the Dodgers' new starting Japanese stud that kind of got shelled yesterday in Korea. So, yeah, real interesting week for the Dodgers.
It appears several reports that he's tipping all of his pitches, so there's could be some issues there for him.
Why is it that when a hitter struggles that you know there's no one? I'm not tipping my swing, you know. But if a pitcher's struggling, oh, he's tipping his pitches. Yeah, how about you're throwing crap belt high down the middle and guys are hitting at 600 feet?
That's right. You know, we'll see if he gets it. Hey, look. It's a minimal $325 million investment. There's no reason to worry here. He'll be fine.
Nah, not at all.
So there was some really interesting news, and I think it's a great sign out of Royals camp. And I'm not saying this because, you know, I'm rooting against Jordan Lyles, and I don't want to see Jordan Lyles in the rotation, although I feel like I did reach my quota last year. I got my fill. But if he can be healthy and if he's just a fifth starter that eats innings and can pitch somewhat better than last year, I'm fine with it. But Matt Quatrero names the fifth starter, and it's not Lyles. He's going to go with Alec Marsh. And I'm glad because I don't want them to be in a situation where we're just going to give it to Lyles because of the amount of money he's making. I want, if they're going to compete, they need to give jobs to the players that earn them.
Agreed.
And Alec Marsh has looked really good. So that's Lyles is going to be in the bullpen. That's a great sign, right?
I agree. There's going to be more accountability to the young kid. You know, every year we come out of spring training and guys are hitting like 900 and this and that. You know, it's... You're saying, okay, whatever. But the pitchers, to me, especially Lyles, that had something to prove, that worked on stuff over the offseason, to come in and get something done. And, he's still in spring training sporting a ERA north of 7. But all those things considered, I think you're going to see a lot of moving parts, especially with some of the kids that, what do you do with Zerpa, Sauer, Taylor, Tyler Duffy, all those guys, that have a chance to come up and down from Omaha. So the fact that they're in the mix this late is a good sign for them, even if they do get sent to Omaha. But the accountability part of it is, okay, we're done with that. You had your growing pains. We went through some severe growing pains. You know, putting you guys in there, it's performance related now. And I think that's one of the biggest steps that you saw when they went out and signed all these guys and spent some money and invested in Bobby and all of the things that go along with it. So, like I said, I think that Mr. Sherman and JJ, they saw the opportunity, in my opinion, that the Central Division is wide open and they're taking a shot at it.
So the way this is shaking out, at least right now, Zerpa is going to be in the bullpen. He made the team. He's going to be in the bullpen. Daniel Lynch was optioned to AAA. Alec Marsh was named the fifth starter. And Jordan Lyles will start off in the bullpen. And so with Zerpa and Lyles in the bullpen, according to Andy Rogers, there seems to be one spot remaining. Matt Sauer, who's the Royals' Rule 5 pick, is the front runner. With Sam Long, and then you mentioned the long shot, outside shot, Tyler Duffy. And so it looks like it's going to come down to the Rule 5 pick, getting that last spot for obvious reasons. But Zerpa's, they're still very high on Zerpa, and they said he could fill a variety of roles in the bullpen, be a multi-inning guy, you know, short stints, whatever they need, he can kind of be a do-it-all.
I agree.
And so I like that, too. I like the upside of his arm providing, filling a variety of roles in the bullpen. What do you think of those moves?
He's got some movement, and I like the demeanor that he has on the mound as well. You can bring him in the sixth inning or something to close out a potential scoring opportunity, let him close it out. You can throw him 2-3 innings, get him once through the lineup. Duffy, I kind of like his stuff as well. Haven't seen Sauer that much, but I think Duffy's got one more start before they head north, and that's going to be a huge determining factor. Sauer, yeah, that's the question mark. It is a Rule 5, which means he's got to stay on the roster or get, you know, sent back or done whatever if they want to buy him back. But they took a shot on him, and his stuff looks pretty good, too. I think it was a pretty good investment. So, yeah, I agree with you that there's the odds-on favorite to be that last guy. But still, you know, Duffy can make a strong case if he goes out and shoves here in his last start.
Nate Bucchetti.
Mac, when you talk about the Rule 5 guys, sometimes on Royals team, the team's been so bad that it's like, okay, it's fine carrying a guy that maybe isn't ready for the big leagues yet, but we think he's got, you know, potential down the road, so we'll just hold on to him this year because we're not going anywhere. This be a little different if they keep a Rule 5 kid this year. Is it got to be a guy that can produce because they're hoping to contend in the division?
If they keep him, they're gonna use him and see what they have in him. And worst comes to worst, then they make that move later on in the season and saying, okay, this just didn't work out. That happens all the time, but you make that investment in him because of the stuff that he has, and it looks like he's made some strides and done well in spring training. The odds-on favorite is all right. We're gonna see what this guy has during the middle of the, you know, during the start of the season. You know, this is a time when the A team is out there on the field getting 3-4 at bats in a game. Trying to get them in shape to play 9-inning games on a daily basis. So you start to see some starters doubling up here before the start of the season. This is why a lot of these decisions come down to that last night right before the start of the season. They just want to make sure they're getting everything out of it that they need to, and as many eyes on the players that are on that borderline, seeing as many eyes and getting opinions on it. So I think they've done their due diligence. I think they have a real good idea of what they want to do, and I think they're going to feel real comfortable coming out of Arizona with a pretty damn good ball club and hoping they get off to a good start and let the energy, you know, fuel itself to play some consistent ball all the way through the year.
Okay, at the beginning of camp, Nick Prado was not in the major league plans.
How about after yesterday?
Right. And so yesterday, he goes 2-for-4, 3 ribbies, his fourth home run. He's hitting .421 with a .1292 OPS in spring. Nate Bucchetti constantly mentions how worthless spring stats are to him and to everyone. But Andy Rogers has said that they've also talked about not just the numbers, but how much they love his approach in the spring. He looks like the guy that he was supposed to be. So what do you do with Nick Prado?
Well, that's going to be a tough one. And all you got to do is give Nick Prado credit for going and working his tail off during the offseason, coming back with a semi-revamped swing. You also have to remember that all the pressure that was on these kids to try and establish themselves as big league players last year is now gone. Now it's time to settle in, and the maturity aspect, I think you're going to see a big difference in some of the players that kind of, you know, were inconsistent throughout the course of the year last year. All of that stuff seems to settle down year two. Doesn't mean that it guarantees success, but you do start to see that maturation process, especially of a hitter, where they're sticking to their guns and their approach, and they're not trying to adjust their swing from day to day, pitch to pitch. They're sticking with some consistency and what they know they need to do to be successful on a consistent basis. You know, when you're a young player and trying to
to be on that team. Every at-bat is just magnified. Some of those kids were trying to get two hits every at-bat that they had that, you know, obviously isn't possible, but that added pressure of, you know, if I don't get this done, they're going to find someone else, even though last year there wasn't anybody else to bring up. So they were kind of bulletproof in that sense. But now it's time to show the maturity that you have. You're a year older. You're a little bit more established. And I think he's seen that out of Nick Prado this year. I like this swing a lot. I mean, it's your prototypical fluid, smooth swing. But the fact that he's got four bombs during the spring, and I don't think any of them were cheap. That ball just jets out of the Arizona air. But he was barreling balls up consistently and made a great case for himself. And, again, you never know.
Nate Buchady.
You help me, Stephen. Where does he fit on the big league roster if they decide to put him? Like, where do they use him?
If Michael Massey, he was dealing with some lower back tightness this week. If he's healthy, then that means there's one bench spot remaining, and it's Deron Blanco, Nick Lofton, Nick Prado, and Drew Waters. Going into spring, it was Blanco because they like him as a pinch hitter, and also he's extremely fast, defense,
he can run, yeah.
Pinch runner, all that, right? So then do you want – that's what he brings to the table. Nick Lofton is a do-it-all guy, but you kind of got that in Adam Frazier and Garrett Hampson. Drew Waters, I think you'd like to see him play every day in center field if he can eventually take that over. And maybe you could say the same thing about Nick Prado. You want him to play every day, but that's what he's competing for. If everyone's healthy, if Massey's healthy, there's one bench spot left, and the four guys all do different things. And so based on that, Nate and then Mac, what guy would you like to claim that last bench spot, considering what their skill sets are?
Yeah, that's another tough question. The problem is, you got Vinny at first. You know Salvi's going to be at first playing some games as well. And so you're not Prado's, you know, not going to get many opportunities there at first base. Look, Coach Q, I think, and his staff have their ideas of what they want the ability to come off. I do think they need the speed on the bench, in my opinion, for later in the game. You do have some slugs out there in certain situations. But to have the speed on the bench to me is an added weapon, in my opinion, that you're going to take.
Nate Buchady?
Yeah, I think are we willing to or do we still think that Prado's got the upside that as a youngish player he'd be better off getting at bats every day in AAA than sitting on the bench and getting used to as a pinch hitter every once in a while.
Well, maybe, but then again, you're also talking AAA, which, you know, the better the pitcher, you're going to be on the big league roster, and it's not a knock against people that are getting off and playing extremely well at the AAA level, but you're not going to see the horses and the studs from AA move up to AAA at least for a month or two during the course of the season to give yourself a better reading against some of the better arms. So that's the tough thing, and does Prado's swing enable him to sit on the bench 3-4 days in a row, get a pinch hit here and there, and what does it do to, you know, the fact that he was on playing in games on a consistent basis in spring training where he could keep his swing grooved? That's a big difference. So again, that's tough on a young player. That's why you get the veterans, Renfro and those guys that know how to be prepared to step in off the bench and do some damage in the games because they've been through the fires for multiple years. So tough equation right there.
Another question is, how comfortable do you feel with Nick Prado in the outfield? He played 16 games in left field last year, 5 games in right field, and if he's going to be on the bench, then you'd like him to be able to be in the outfield as well as first base and DH, and that could give him some more playing opportunities. And so, you know, how do they feel about him playing more outfield? Hey, Mac, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Next week, we'll be talking about how the Royals did on opening day. Can you believe it?
Woohoo! Yeah.
That's right. Unbridled enthusiasm.
And we got decent weather opening day for a first.
That's right, you know.
Hey, about those Royals.
We'll take it. We're going to take it.
We're going to be without Gary this year, so we can't rag on him as much. So we can still throw him under the bus when the weather forecast is wrong.
Might just have a special guest for your segment next week. How about that? Thank you, Mac.
All right, boys.
There's some baseball talk for you to chew on. Yeah. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.